This is The People's Game. I'm Alan Minsky, and I'm joined right now by Sean Engel. Sean Engel, to my mind, is one of the people who has sat in the chair at the center of the universe as much as any one person, if he can imagine it maybe in a Dante-esque manner of concentric circles. Well, Sean Engel's sitting in one of the big chairs because he has organized something called the Guardian Fan Network, and he has also organized the World Cup 2010 live blog on guardian.co.uk. The amount of traffic that is on the live blog, on the comments, is just unbelievable. It is an unbelievably fantastic blog, and if people want to relive the World Cup, they can just go back into the archives and read these amazing entries. Sean Engel is the sports editor for guardian.co.uk, and he is also a contributing writer to the Guardian newspaper. Welcome to The People's Game, Sean Engel.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yes, and tell me a little bit about, first of all, you were in South Africa, okay, and you were organizing this amazing blog that seems to run constantly. So explain to me how you organized the live blog first, and then we'll go on to the fan network.
Well, the live blog, basically, we've done minute-by-minute reports on matches, which incorporate text commentary with what our readers are saying since the 2002 World Cup. And they're always the most popular things on our site. To give you an example, during this World Cup, they regularly got over 500,000 page views and upwards of 150,000 to 200,000 unique users. But the idea with the live blog was that before the matches kick off, or for things like team news and gossip, we didn't really have anything. So the idea was we'd bring that in. We'd have tweets from our writers on the ground. We'd have analysis from our writers on the ground, and also from our fans network people from around the world.
And they seem to run well before and well after the matches, though.
Well, absolutely. Well, we just sort of let the comments fly open. But if you notice, we kind of kept more, we inputted more during, before the matches rather than, and then when the matches have taken place, we then sort of said to people, well, look, if you want minute-by-minute commentary, you can go here. But then we still keep the blog updating ourselves.
How much more popular is the World Cup than the British general election?
Well, the British general election did well for the Guardian website, but the World Cup has just smashed it. Regularly 10 or 15 of the top stories every day are World Cup stories. This is not just on the sports site, this is on the whole of the Guardian .co.uk network.
And at the risk of getting you in trouble with your bosses if you get the facts right, where does the Guardian sit right now in terms of English language websites, in terms of readership and comments? It strikes me as it's one of the most successful in the world.
Well, I mean, our boss, our editor-in-chief, a guy called Alan Musbridger, says that he wants the Guardian to become the world's leading liberal voice. And I think we're well on the way to doing that. I don't know exactly the figures, but we're right up there with the New York Times. We're up there with several other publications, and we get a huge number of visitors, upwards of 30 to 40 million unique users every month. So we're not doing badly.
Well, out in America, I think, I can't say for sure, but I think the Huffington Post sort of tries to track you guys and become the closest thing we have in the United States to you guys. But, it is striking because it does seem that in the internet age, the Guardian newspaper does not compete with the top circulation dailies, but it seems to be the most popular website that comes out of England as far as Americans participating in it.
And that's true. I think a lot of that was down to 9/11, because The Guardian has always been a broad church. It's always published columnists from across the spectrum that will be critical of anything. And I think maybe liberal America for the first 3, 4, 5, 6 months after 9/11, the voices were muted, while The Guardian, people said what they thought, and they had interesting analysis about why 9/11 happened and the consequences from it. So I think that certainly helped us gain American traffic. And also, speaking sports specifically, a lot of Americans, they like soccer, they like what we do, and we have a big readership from the States. It's our second biggest after the UK.
The amount of World Cup coverage on The Guardian, I think, of course, ESPN and ESPN Global, they have the American coverage. rights for the World Cup tournament, and then I think a lot of other places around the world, ESPN has it on. They obviously have tons of video and dynamic elements like that. But the amount of written words on the World Cup, is it possible that The Guardian, you know, you're the sports editor, my word, you must have had a very busy month. It seems to exceed anything. I mean, it certainly, it strikes me as topping, you know, the Times, the Independent, and the Telegraph combined in terms of the amount of coverage.
Well, our view is that, you know, we aren't just a British newspaper. You know, we're a global website. You know, we have readers from across the globe, and we want to cater for them. You know, we're not going to give you the lowdown on, you know, every single, you know, facet of the Honduras squad. But, you know, we would hope that we'd have something on there. So if you're interested, you know, you'll find out, you know, about them. It's just sort of a realization we've had for a long time that our readers aren't just interested in the Big Four and the Premier League. They're interested in, you know, what's going on in Serie A. They're interested in what's going on in La Liga. And when the World Cup comes around, they're interested in most of the games most of the time.
And explain to listeners what the World Cup Fan Network is, whose idea was it, and how fun it was or not to organize. Because we here at the People's Game, we set out with an idea that we were going to get people for all 32 teams to be on our just daily radio show. And in all honesty, I sort of piggybacked on your work, Sean. About 7 of the people to 9 of the people were just drawn off of your fan network, and they've been fantastic, by the way.
Well, basically, it was an idea I had in the office a while ago, because no matter how good our website is, we're never going to be able to know what's going on in, you know, downtown Buenos Aires. We haven't got a correspondent there. We're not going to know what's happening in Zurich. We're not going to know what's happening in Auckland if, you know, a New Zealand are playing. So the idea was we'd find, you know, people who are, you know, in some cases professional journalists, but most of the time they were just bloggers who had a deep knowledge of football in their country. So, therefore, adding to, you know, the professional content we're providing. And what we did, you know, we gave them access to our site so they could tweet anything they wanted. We sort of did say to them, look, here are our terms and conditions. Please don't swear. Please don't go off the rails. And they haven't. So, you know, it's wonderful they've done that. And we also gave them certain incentives as well. We said we commission a paid blog from our fans network every day as well. And the idea basically is that you have a much more rounded picture of how the World Cup is being celebrated across the globe that, you know, that our 10 journalists out of South Africa would otherwise be able to provide. It was a nightmare setting up, in to be absolutely honest, because, you know, we launched a couple of appeals and we had maybe 1,000 applicants. So we had to go through all those. I had to go through every single blog, every single application. It was difficult to whittle it down. There were some countries where we had no one. You know, Cameroon, for example, we ended up phoning the embassy and saying, do you know anyone? Same with Ivory Coast. We were putting in calls to the newspapers out in the Ivory Coast and saying, look, do you know any young bloggers that could do this for us? And the last couple we only got, you know, a couple of weeks before the tournament started.
Well, your Slovakian was one. Yes, Slovakian. And finally, I was able to arrange an interview with him because I couldn't find anybody to talk on Slovakia in English. And we got him in Hong Kong, and he was great. Slovakian in Hong Kong, and also wrote very well when he wrote short entries on his blog site. I noticed you have the girl at the pub who's a marvelous tweeter, based in New York City, as one of your Cameroonian people, and we did have her on, though we also got somebody from Cameroon. I gotta tell you, Lazar Treshan, No More Onion Bags, a New York City based, Uruguayan blogger that you guys had has been a regular on our show, and he's been utterly fantastic. So just a few more big questions for you, Sean. First of all, is this the largest, shared human cultural event in history? Can you think of anything that's been bigger? Is this the biggest World Cup ever?
I've been to only one Olympics in Beijing, and I've been to two World Cups as a journalist. I think they're both epic in scale. What you have with the World Cup, it goes on for best part of 5 weeks, while the Olympics is more like 2.5 weeks. So arguably it is the biggest global event in the world. And the other thing I'd say is that there's a difference, I think, watching on TV and also being there. When you're there, there's something wonderful about how you'll just bump into fans from around the world, you'll get talking, you'll share memorabilia, you'll go for a drink after the game. And I think that the World Cup, you know, with a few exceptions of, you know, the hooligans and the idiots, it unites fans from across the world, like, you know, very few other sports. So, you know, that's another great thing about it. I would say I think Berlin was better just because the public transport was better and it was easier to actually get around. But South Africa has done a wonderful job as well. I had a ball when I was out there.
Obviously, The Guardian, for people who don't know, is a sort of left-leaning progressive paper, and they've had quite an set of debates on their pages during course of the World Cup, and there were two things. I can only imagine that Sean Engel does not agree with Terry Eagleton's take, that it's just bread and circuses to keep the masses down. And then the other question is soccer a socialist sport, Sean?
Is it a socialist sport?
Yeah.
No. You don't have to look at the Premier League to see that it's not. It's a full-on capitalist beast that's very hard for us to tame. And there's those of us that love the sport, but we don't enjoy the excesses that we've seen, particularly in Europe over the last decade or so. But it's been very hard to stop, the big business owners, putting prices up higher and higher, fleecing the fans. Some of the more unscrupulous people have taken charge of our Premier League club. All those things, I think, most fans wouldn't, approve of. But they've been hard to actually, stop them doing it. So it's certainly not socialist.
So you disagree with John Barnes, though. I think he was mainly focusing on the nature of the game, I suppose, on the field, that you need team unity, team cohesion, and the lessons of a good socialism versus an English side that he felt was with bloated stars who cared more about their paychecks, yada, yada.
There's an element of truth to that, but I think that applies to any team sport, really. Mm. I guess maybe, gridiron, American football, whatever you call it, slightly different because there is such a focus on a couple of key players. But generally, like with any team sport, you're only as good as, your strongest and your weakest part. So you can make the argument, but it applies to any team sport as well, I think.
Then two final questions, and I'll let you go back to your commute. The English side, a few weeks on, how wretched was it in your mind? And then the final question, who do you take for Spain versus Netherlands?
England side were completely wretched. I didn't have particularly high hopes before the tournament. I predicted they'd go out to the first good side. They met and the second round, and that's what happened. Why they played so badly, I mean, God, we could spend hours talking about it. But certainly, the fact that our best players in the Premier League didn't perform, is something to do with it. I think you've got to go to Spain. I backed them at the start of the tournament, but it won't be easy against Holland. And Holland, had a fantastic record in qualifying. They won every game. They were on a good run at the moment. But it wouldn't shock me at all if Spain won, 1-2 in the final.
Sean Engel, who for a few more days will continue to sit at the center of the universe. The collected work that runs through Sean Engel on the Guardian website is just unbelievable. It's been an incredible pleasure for myself, and I can only speak for millions of people around the world, I imagine. Thank you so much for your work on the Guardian website.
Thank you very much, and apologies for the noisy background. It's a busy London evening.
Well, thank you so much, Sean Engel. This is The People Game. I'm Alan Minsky.